The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The Holy See has taken down its main Vatican.va website following a suspected attempt to hack the site. The identity and motives of the alleged hacker, or hackers, remains unclear. However, the attack comes a day after Russian leaders criticized Pope Francis for comments he made on Russia's war with Ukraine, and shortly after the Vatican challenged the Chinese government for appointing a bishop without authorization from the Holy See.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, we talked about that at the very beginning of the show today in Hour 1. If you want to learn a little bit more about what happened at the Vatican, just go to relevantradio.com and do a search for the Drew Mariani Show. Of course, you can check out our podcasts at all places where podcasts are housed. You know, Apple, Spotify, places like that. Maggie will have the show up, though, probably about an hour after we're off the air. She's got some work to do. She's on my board right now. She joins me, and in just a second, Dr. Paul Kenger will be stopping by. But that is an interesting story. The Vatican News is saying that this happened on Tuesday. The Holy Father came out and made a comment regarding Vladimir Putin and the unjust attack on Ukraine. Next thing you know, their website's been down since Tuesday. They did get some of the press portals up. But beyond that, they're out of commission right now. So more on that, as I said. We had Ambassador Francis Rooney on with us. And the interview, if you want to read it, by the Holy Fathers, is in the Jesuit publication America. But he was asked about why he hasn't said anything directly about Vladimir Putin in that interview. How come he haven't said anything about Putin? So I'll share with you what the Holy Father said. I'll just give you a quick quote. He said, "When I speak about Ukraine, I speak of a people who are martyred. If you have martyred people, you have someone who martyrs them. When I speak about Ukraine, I speak about the cruelty because I have much information about cruelty of troops that come in. Generally, the cruelest are perhaps those who are of Russia but are not of Russian tradition, such as the Chechens and the Buryats as well. Certainly, the one who invades is the Russian state. This is very clear. Sometimes I try not to specify so as not to offend and rather condemn in general, although it's well known whom I am condemning. It's not necessary that I put a name and surname." That's the Holy Father. So he says this, final sentence. He says, why do I not name Putin? Because it's not necessary. It's already known. However, sometimes people latch on to a detail. Everyone knows my stance with Putin and without Putin, without naming him. You know, so basically he's saying, hey, it's Vladimir Putin in Russia, right? It's his way of saying it. And he's talked about some of the atrocities that have taken place there. But to say the Russians weren't happy with that answer, that's really an understatement. Russian media immediately went on the offense, claiming that the Pope was, and I kid you not, you know what they were saying? Why did we always, race always comes into things. The Russian media was saying that he was race baiting. He was race baiting. That's because he named the Chechens, and I think it's the Buryats. I don't know how to pronounce the name that I read there. Buryati. I think it's Buryati. He called them the cruelest people in the war against Ukraine. And, of course, the day after the interview came out, Vatican's website mysteriously went down, crashed, and still hasn't been up. So Dr. Paul Kengor wrote a great piece, and we're going to link over to it for you. His headline is simple. Ruski's whack race-baiting Pope Francis. Catchy little tune, headline. You can check that out. And he joins us today to give us some insight onto what he's writing about. Check him out, too. His new book's out, The Devil and Beladad. We talked about that last time he was here. It's available from Tam Books. Add that to your collection of Dr. Kengor's books. I have a number on my own bookshelf. Hey, Doctor, thanks for joining me again. Good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. This is, I think, a pretty significant developing story that, as you said, with the hack of the Vatican, that I find that no coincidence. And I think it could escalate from here.
So the Pope, of course, wasn't race baiting when he mentioned the Chechens. And how do you pronounce the other? Is it Buryati? Is that how you say that?
I think it's Buryati, yeah. I mean, there's probably 100 different ways to pronounce it. But yeah, I mean, what you saw here, and you read the quote from the interview with America Magazine, and he said in there, Pope Francis, why do I not name Putin, right? And right, there, right. He, there he effectively named Putin. And he said, well, it's not necessary. Right. Everyone knows my stance with Putin or without Putin, without naming him. And you know, Putin showing, you know, acting like a true dictator. Yep. Right. Dictators don't like to be criticized. You know, thugs don't like to be criticized. So, you know, the best way to stop a bully is to go up and confront him. And bullies like to be left completely alone. And that's, you know, that's what Putin is. He's a bully. So for having, you know, the apparent audacity to point this out, to state this, Pope Francis, the Russians fire back by, you know, basically having a giant collective cowl at the Kremlin. And I thought it was almost humorous. They do this a lot. In fact, I've talked about this on your show ever since they invaded the Ukraine last February. They immediately retreat in kind of, you know, Western language that they think American liberals and progressives will like, right? Yep. They start accusing the Pope of racism. You know, back in February, they accused Volodymyr Zelensky, who's Jewish, of anti-Semitism, right? You know, it was basically springtime in Kiev, as far as Putin was, you have springtime for Hitler in Kiev, as far as Putin was framing it. And they've done this, and they called Pope Pius XII Hitler's Pope. Wow. You know, back in a Radio Moscow broadcast in 1945. That started with the Soviets. They called every cardinal and bishop behind the Iron Curtain a Nazi sympathizer. You know, Cardinal Menzenti, Cardinal Vyshinsky. They did it to Karol Wojtyla. So on and on and on and on. And here, because Pope Francis merely points out the obvious, and you know, the poor Pope has been walking on eggshells to do everything but name Putin by name, right? And then he says what he says here, and they accuse him of race baiting. Yeah. So it's classic, and it shows again what real thugs the Russian leadership is.
Yeah, I was wondering when I saw that, you know, why would Russian media and leaders claim that he was race baiting, of all people, Pope Francis, right? But, you know, I was always curious about Russia's position, you know, and they said they're going to go into Ukraine and denazify it. And then it turned to desatanize it. I mean, is it the what they perceive the rest of the world, you know, how they'll digest that? Or do they really believe that they need to denazify, desatanize Ukraine?
Well, I'll give you a couple Russian words. One is dezinformatsiya, which means disinformation. And the other is agitprop. They had a department of agitprop, and agitprop meant agitation and propaganda. And this is what they do. They come up with these hysterical claims, lies, assertions, distortions, disinformation. And, you know, they do the whole, speaking of Hitler, right? They do the whole big lie thing that Hitler did. You just repeat a big lie loud enough over and over and over and over again, and you hope it sticks. And again, it's funny that they choose these kind of hot button issues that they kind of lift out of the playbook of the American left, right? What would people really not like if we called Pope Francis, right? Well, not traditionalists, right? I know, we'll call him a racist. Yeah, here it is, page one, racist. Next thing will be anti-Semite. Next thing will be right. Homophobic, whatever they want to come up with. So it's incumbent upon us, Drew, not to take it seriously. Yeah. And realize it for what it is. And what's a shame is when the Russians have done this stuff 50, 60, 70 years ago, and people on the left actually pick it up. They're not taking the bait this time around because people on the left hate Vladimir Putin. Yeah. But for decades, they took the bait on the Hitler's Pope thing with Pius XII. Right. As you mentioned my book on Bella Dodd, the first thing the Communist Party did when Bella Dodd publicly broke from it was they issued a press release. They sent it to all the Western media. She got a call from an AP and a UPI reporter saying, Mrs. Dodd, we read here in this press release that you are, according to the Communist Party, an anti-Semite, pro-Hitler, pro-Nazi, anti-Negro, anti-Puerto Rican, a racist. Do you have any comment?
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
So this is what they do. Wow. But they won't get away with Francis because, fortunately, coincidentally, in this case, American liberals hate Putin because they're convinced that Putin conspired with Trump to steal the election from Hillary in 2016. And plus, they don't like Putin because Putin's against gay marriage, transgenderism, says in Russia we will have mama and papa. So for all those reasons too, you know, the American left hates Putin, so the name calling here won't work. But they're going to try it anyway, and they're trying it, And now here they are a couple days later, even apparently, it looks like probably, hacking the Vatican website.
Yeah.
So that goes straight from disinformation to, like, information warfare.
Yeah, right. I mean, so there's a direct attack on the Vatican. This might seem like an extreme thought, but did the Pope put himself in the middle of danger? He's in the middle of a hot dispute with Russia, has, you know, people, you take a look at history and what they've done to St. John Paul II, you know, there was an assassination attempt on his life. Has the Pope put himself or any other member of the church in danger because of these particular comments regarding Putin and what they've done on the world scene?
Well, Pius XII tried to avoid that by naming Hitler by name, right?
Mm-hmm.
And look at all the trouble that he's gotten in with historians, even though he was, of course, a great friend to Jews and so forth. But Francis probably has put himself at risk. I wrote a piece on this for American Spectator. You guys probably posted it, and I quote he's kind of the deputy speaker of the House in the Russian Duma. He's a major senator, a major player there named Kosiev, and his statement, which was printed in TASS, the official Soviet news agency, he came out and he said that Francis's statement is completely unacceptable, said it's completely false, it is an enormous mistake. Think about that, an enormous mistake. Yeah, quote, totally unacceptable in today's world. And I found this, you read between the lines here, Drew, they said this is surprising behavior coming from one of the leaders of Christianity. And by the way, what they mean by one of the leaders of Christianity, they're putting him right up there with the leader of the Russian Orthodox Church, Kirill, right? And they want him to be the leader of Christianity. That's always been a part of this sort of Russian nationalism. Even Stalin was trying to do that. So this is confronting the Pope in more than just the way of they're angry that he called out Putin without, I guess, directly, literally surname and name calling out Putin. But they don't like the fact that he's asserting himself at all, because they've wanted Moscow to be the new Rome over there for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years.
And where's this? Where's the patriarch there in Russia? Isn't he in Putin's camp? What has he said?
Yeah, he is. And that's been quite scandalous. He's been an outright apologist for Putin. I'm trying to say this as fairly and charitably as I can. He has been accused worldwide, including by Orthodox people and priests in the West, in the East, of quote unquote blessing the war in the Ukraine, which, you know, he maybe does not dispute, but people, I mean, you just Google this. There are Orthodox leaders around the world who are very angry at him, not only for not standing up to Putin and what Putin has done in the Ukraine, but seeming to condone it and even blessing it.
Let's take a call or two. If you want to get in, I only have Dr. Kengor, maybe another 10 minutes or so. The number, 888-914-9149, if you're just joining us. Big story developing. The Vatican website has been hacked. The Holy Father did an interview with the Jesuit publication America and basically called out Vladimir Putin and Russia for their aggression. And we're seeing things begin to ramp up. And as I said, Dr. Kengor wrote a great piece. You can check it out. Maggie's linked over to it on our Twitter page at Drew Mariani Show. It's called Ruskies Whack, Race Baiting Pope Francis. Stan in Nevada, good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Kengor. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon. Dr. Kengor, when I read your book, A Pope and a President, the thing that's striking me now today about all the pundits and the military experts is the lack of humility, because what stuck out with me was how President Reagan humbled himself to the briefing of the, our Blessed Mother, and how he worked with the Pope. And what I'm wondering right now is I don't see President Biden, I see him being like woke. I see European Union being like woke. I see all these guys being woke. And so who's working with, who's be the country that would step forward to fight communism? Would that be Poland? You mentioned something about that in a previous article about Saint Faustina, basically prophesizing that Poland would be, you know, the sort of like the linchpin that would help defeat that, because I see some logic to Putin's claims when he takes a look over to our, you know, looks at our country, it's all woke. You see, and then you see the V4 pushing back out there of Poland and Hungary and that, pushing back on the European Union to go turn their own culture woke. So I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that, because I see a spiritual war going on and almost a church standing alone.
Yeah, I will agree on the point. In fact, Putin has described the West as flat out depraved, right? He's even called it the satanic West. There's no question, I think, that when he criticizes the West on many moral cultural issues, that he's justified there, and it's gotten a lot of people on our side to be sympathetic to him. But on the other hand, he's still a thug and a bad guy. He's invaded a peaceful neighbor, and he's not a good guy. So even if he says some things that we agree with, we got to be very careful to realize just how out of line he is and just what a dictator he is. I got an email today, speaking of Poland, from a Polish friend who his family has been very high up in the government there for years. He's a great thinker in all of this. And he read my piece and he said, you need to know that the criticism that Pope Francis was making here is spot on. Mm-hmm. And he said there have been riots at all kinds of forced conscription draft stations throughout Russia, where they are bringing in these kind of Russian and non-Russian minorities who are being thrust into the Russian army completely against their will. And he said it's not being reported in the West at all, because we just don't give enough attention to any of these those things. And I would add one more thing. Speaking of a pope and a president in that book, mm-hmm. man, you are so right. What we are lacking right now, there is no Reagan, Gorbachev, and John Paul II on the world stage, and that is all the difference right now. Hey, all the difference.
Stan, thanks for the call. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I want to, and before I jump into the next phone call here, Doctor, let me just follow up on something you said. I mean, what is the mindset? I got stopped by somebody who was in an event not too long ago, and they said to me, where's Relevant Radio when it comes to Vladimir Putin in this war in Ukraine? There are a number of people who feel that Vladimir Putin is somehow justified in this action. What's their position, and how do they justify that?
It's terrible, and it starts from a sympathy for Putin, because Putin is kind of a religious traditionalist, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in fact, long before he was opposing same-sex marriage, wokeism, transgenderism, the whole LGBTQ agenda, and all of that stuff, he was the first Russian leader in 50, 60 years to put restrictions on abortion in the country, to actually push for fertility for Russian families. So in all of those ways, he really curried favor, sympathy with people in the West. And by the way, that's not to say or to suggest that he doesn't mean it. I think he genuinely believes in those things. But again, we have to be smart and say, okay, I like those things about him. All right. Yeah. Put those in your little plus column there. Right. But then you look on the other side, right, with the murders and the killings of dissidents and the invasions of countries. And imagine being in a country. Imagine if you were in Russia right now and this man had just gone through your whole military, and your kids are in the military and they're dying in the Ukraine and they don't want to be there. And now he's going to the next round of conscripting the next group of your kids in, and you can't dissent. And if you dare say anything in public, you could get killed. And this guy is a thug. So no matter what you think of Zelensky, and even maybe some of Putin's descriptions and characterizations of Nazis and so forth in the Ukraine, that was a peaceful, democratic country. The Ukraine did not invade Russia. Russia keeps invading the Ukraine, and it's held that. I'm not stopping, and I still think this could blow up into World War III.
I do.
And look, here we are now in December, and he still hasn't given up yet, Drew. And now the Pope's getting dragged into it. It's going to get worse before it gets better. I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Cause I sit back, I was thinking, I said, what's the off ramp? How do we end this? How does he get out? I mean, clearly he thought it'd be a very short conflict. He would take over. And if he could turn back the hands of time, I would assume He would gladly do that because, you know, he's not winning in Ukraine, and the world's most visible religious leader has clearly condemned his actions. He's not winning, I would say, on the international scene. He's got a few allies, but of course you have to look who those allies are. What does Putin do now? Is he just going to continue to rage until he ultimately crushes Ukraine? Or I don't know how this thing shakes out.
I think so. He wants to win. It's very clear that he is hell-bent on winning, not on retreating, not on losing. So it begs the question, how in the world can he possibly win right now? He's lost.
Right, exactly.
He's lost on the battlefield. What can he possibly do? Well, you know, the only thing kind of left in the literal arsenal, is to ramp up, nuke up, take it to the next level. Yeah. And then when you do that, truly all hell breaks loose. And then I don't know if it spills into NATO. I don't know if the United States gets involved. And, you know, poor Pope Francis is just appealing to all sides for peace.
Yep.
And when he dares in this interview with magazine to say what everyone knows, that the reason for the problem is, as he puts it, the Russian state, right, the leadership, the one man that he doesn't want to name, which is obvious. The man acts like a little, the man being Putin acts like a little child and starts stomping his feet and, you racist. You know, it's just crazy.
All right, let's do this. So we only have a few minutes left. My guest, Dr. Paul Kengor, if you want to get in, you'll have to make your call now. 888-914-9149. Shana has been waiting to join us in Virginia. Hi, Shana. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thanks for having me. So my question is, I was just hoping he could talk more about what Russia's motive, or what the Russian government, specifically Putin's motivations are in concealing so much. I know what I've been reading on Russian media is very different from what you read on the American media. Yeah. And so what is sort of going on behind the scenes there? And what
Shana, before Dr. Kengor responds to you, what are you reading on Russian media? I'm curious as to what they're saying.
Yeah, so I was a Russian foreign policy major. And a lot of what they're saying is that there isn't a serious war going on, that Ukraine is the aggressor, that, you know, the United States is blowing this up.
Yep.
Right. And they're just sort of spinning it into this thing that the Russian people don't need to be worried about it and things like that. And that sort of ties into the recruiting thing that he was talking about.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Doctor, I'll let you respond.
Yeah, it is indeed what they say, but you know, it's very black and white. In February, the Russians invaded. They invaded the Ukraine, and it walked to walk back the clock. April 2005, Putin, he was in his first term there. He's supposed to be limited to two terms as president. So he's supposed to be done in 2008. He's there until at least 2030, okay, and probably be there longer. But in April 2005, he gave the equivalent of the Russian State of the Union speech to the Russian Duma. And he said that the collapse of the Soviet Union was the great geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. And so his goal is to resurrect and unify the old Russian Empire as much as is possible for him. And the one country that he wants the most is Ukraine. And we always thought for a long time, I talked about this a bunch on the show before, but I teach this subject. I used to tell my students, well, I think he probably just wants the Crimea, right? Or maybe parts of eastern Ukraine. I mean, students, he's not going to, like, invade Kiev, right? I mean, he'd never do that. I mean, you know, who do you think he is, right? Well, he's invaded Kiev, and he wants more than Kiev. And he's blowing the daylights out of the place. And he hasn't stopped, and he hasn't retreated, and he hasn't given up. And if he could have Vladimir Zelensky's head on a platter delivered to him in a feast at a giant table at the Kremlin, with a big goblet of Russian vodka in one hand and a big giant turkey leg in the other, you know, he'd be pounding on the table, relishing every minute of that.
That's a description, huh? Hey, Shana, thank you. I hope that helped. I appreciate you dialing in and listening as well. Doctor, I only have probably about a minute left for you, so I want people to get in touch with your article. And also be able to track you down. So if people want to read you, I know we linked over to it, so they can go to Relevant Radio. They can go to at Drew Mariani Show on Twitter and find it. But Ruskie's Whack, Race Baiting Pope Francis, where's it initially published?
Yeah, it's the American Spectator. I'm the editor of the American Spectator.
So it's spectator.org. If you go there, you can find my articles archive. And by the way, folks, please sign up. You can get my articles for free. And you can also check out other articles at the website, too. You can also subscribe, but I think you get like 12 free articles a month. And I write like once a week on average.
That's awesome. I don't know where you find the time to do that, teach classes, write books. You're something else. I'm going to have to hang out with you, take a lesson from you. Hey, enjoy your weekend, okay? Get a little rest.
All right.
We'll catch up soon.
Take care.
That's Dr. Paul Kanger. Again, at Twitter, on Twitter, at Drew Mariani Show. You can get his article. You can follow me at Drew Mariani as well. And, of course, coming up in just a moment, Peter Atkinson is going to be joining me. Relevant Radio is doing some very exciting things here. Get you up to speed on those. Plus, we'll talk Disney. We'll talk Disney. We've been dealing with them a lot. There's some new developments there. Stay with me. I'll be right back. Don't go away. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower. Your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep your station running. Join in with thousands of other listeners who have given their unused vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Connecting you to the truths of your Catholic faith. The Drew Mariani Show.
Relevant Radio.
On Relevant Radio.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome back. It's good to be here with you today. Feel free to join me. I'm going to open the phones in just a moment. You can dial in at 888-914-9149. Christmas is now just, 23 days away, I guess. It's pretty amazing. And we here at Relevant Radio are helping you to get prepared to celebrate the birth of our Savior in a lot of different ways. One of those ways is the retelling of the classic Charles Dickens tale, A Christmas Carol. It's produced by our own radio acting company. You got to check it out, The Merry Beggars. And of course, it's available starting today. So I hope you will hope you get on board and tell others about it too. It's a great way to evangelize. It's a wholesome entertainment. I think you're going to love it. Another way is what we call Christmas Live. It's a radio variety show that will be airing live this Sunday, the 4th of December, 6 Central. So set your watches for it right now. Sunday, the 4th, 6 Central, 7 Eastern. You can do the math for the other time zones as well. But I hope you'll be spending that time with us rather than, you know, with secular companies like Disney. And I want to talk about them just for a moment, if we can. You know, the House of the Mouse, as they like to say, it's been losing money hand over fist as they put out movies that flop on opening weekend, and more people are now staying away from the theme parks because I think people are really fed up with their wokeism, with their latest gender theory, you know, that's being now forced on them. When all they want to do is take their kids to see an entertaining movie or enjoy a theme park, right? That's not the case. You got to continue to push this ideology and this particular agenda. So the board recently forced Bob Chapek out of the CEO office, and they reinstated Bob Iger, who he retired. I think he's 69 years of age. He retired 2 years ago, and he told employees that he's gonna work on quieting things down at the company. He says, "Do I like the company being embroiled in controversy?" He asked it, of course, rhetorically. Said, of course not. But, you know, it can be distracting. I saw an interview with him a little bit earlier today in which he says, this can be distracting. I think it's more than distracting. I think it's causing, you know, a real impact on the bottom line of the company. It's having a negative impact on the brand of the company as well as its financials. But to the extent that you know, he can work things out, he says he's going to see what he can do. And he's had success in the past. I'm joined today by Peter Atkinson. He's the director of Merry Beggars. He's kind of a resident entertainment expert here at Relevant Radio. And I thought I'd tap into his expertise about what's happening both in the culture and in the entertainment world, as well as bring you up to speed on some positive alternatives for you. Peter, good to have you back.
Good to be on, Drew.
Thank you so much. What do you make of the Iger story, huh? And Disney? I mean, a big wake-up call for them, huh?
So it's interesting. Iger, he had a memoir released a couple years back, and it was a really interesting exploration of his time at Disney. And for him, as the head of Disney for decades, I believe, his focus was always on serving the audience. And so his successor, which was handpicked by him, by the way, Bob Chapek, Bob II, he was handpicked by Bob Iger. Mm. But then as soon as Bob Chapek showed up, there started to be problems. There was the conflict between the Florida government under Ron DeSantis and Disney around the bill that the left termed "Don't Say Gay," which was not what that bill was about.
But parental then, rights bill, right?
But then Ron DeSantis, you know, stared Disney down, and there was that whole conflict. And then around streaming, around COVID,
right.
Scarlett Johansson sued Disney because Disney took away some of her royalties that would have come from theatrical release, and Bob Chapek got into a public fight with talent. And this is the difference between Bob Chapek and Bob Iger. Bob Chapek is a finance guy. He knows numbers. He was dealing with sort of Disney's profit margins, talking about raising pricing on streaming, things like that. Bob Iger comes from the world of network television, and he actually knows how to deal with talent. So he never would have gotten in a fight with talent, with Scarlett Johansson. He would never have pushed the culture war front and center. So some right-wing outlets have said, oh, this is great. Disney is learning that if you go woke, you go broke. Yeah, Bob Iger is going to be a return to sanity, so on and so forth, which is unbelievably naive. It was under Bob Iger that you started to see a lot of projects that promoted LGBTQ themes start to emerge. You had the Thor miniseries, which made Thor bisexual. You had all these different things that started to happen. The only thing is it's not that Bob Iger doesn't fight the culture war. It's that he's better at it. And so less than people think there's a return to normalcy there. Disney's last movie, Strange World, which features an explicitly gay character at the center of this kids' entertainment, is going to be par for the course for a while. I don't think Disney's going to pivot away from being woke. I think they're just going to be more subtle and better at executing on it.
I don't understand the benefit of going this direction. You said if you go woke, you go broke. Is there any truth to that, or do people not really care? I would think... I don't understand the purpose of making Thor, you know, such a masculine figure, a bisexual.
Well, a lot of it comes down to generational attitudes. So my generation, I'm a millennial. Most of us support gay marriage. Mm-hmm. Most of us are, you know, marching right in lockstep with the culture.
Right.
The older generations definitely are not as pro-gay marriage, so on and so forth. So I think partly it comes down to virtue signaling to younger audiences that we're of the same mind, we're modern, we're progressive. But the key in Disney's project is not to do it so much so that older generations notice it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's sort of that line. Like you need to signal to the young generation. You need to signal to the sort of more extreme professionals who are making all this entertainment. You need to signal like, we're with you, we get it, we're gonna push the envelope, we're gonna be transgressive, but not make it so central to your brand that, you know, moms and dads who are, you know, Baptist or Catholic or Christian or you know, Orthodox Jews or Muslim or whatever, that they would actually recognize like, oh, they're trying to undermine everything we're trying to give our kids.
Right. So has it undermined their brand, and will they recover from it? I mean, the latest film, Strange World, had a lead character in it that's gay. That flopped.
As did Buzz Lightyear, which also, you know, had similar themes. So,
I mean, you're talking a lot of money, too, $100 million. I mean, that's a huge loss. What gave them the idea that it's a good idea to go down this path? I guess is what I'm looking at, if it's not economically productive for them.
I think when you have a ton of money, you can afford to make a lot of mistakes
that's true.
You believe are a righteous cause. You know, the people who disregard the notion of traditional marriage, who think that it doesn't matter that a child has a mother and a father, they believe that their cause is righteous. Now, obviously, as Catholics, we wouldn't agree, but to most of them, they're doing it because they believe it's the right thing to do. And when you have a multi-billion-dollar balance sheet, mm-hmm. you're willing to take losses. You know, it used to be the standard that film production companies, they would have a few blockbusters that would make a ton of money, and then they would have their art house films. And the purpose of those art house films is they would never make any money, but they were a signal to the other people in the industry that we're real artists. So if you're a real artist, come and work and collaborate with us. Mm-hmm. And it was important to their business model because it meant that, you know, artists and directors like Martin Scorsese, who cares about film, Quentin Tarantino, who cares about film, would be willing to work with Fox or, you know, one of the other large production companies because they're sort of buying their credibility that we're an artist. We're going to make real films. And I think there's a similar dynamic here. You make films that are, you know, deeply progressive and disregard sort of traditional norms of ethics for the purpose of signaling to all of the higher ups in the entertainment industry that we're on your side. We're on the same team.
Is there an audience out there for more conservative, maybe Christian audiences? And I think, you know, the Passion of the Christ, Maggie and I were talking about that before the broadcast, and we just talked about what a blockbuster that is. Gibson's working on The Resurrection. He had his finger, I think, he acted in Father Stu. I don't know if you saw that film or not, Father Stu.
Yeah, I mean,
I loved it. I mean, I normally don't see a movie twice, but I was on a plane and I got to watch this movie, right, Father Stu? And I thought, oh my gosh, this is so good. I said to my wife, you've got to watch this. I'll watch it with you. I just thought it was really, really well done. It was wholesome, uplifting. I thought it was a great film.
I think there is a market for films that aren't progressive, for films that are conservative. I think there's a couple of difficulties. One is they have to be really well made, and that requires industry experience. You know, you need to know what it's like to work with writers. I just finished this morning a 3 hours writer's room with 9 writers developing our next series. And that, you know, I know how to do that because I'm coming from that industry of entertainment. If you don't know, you think like, oh, I can get Sue from the parish who means really well, and she and I can write a movie. And you can. It will be a terrible movie. No, I'm sure Sue's heart is, you know, deeply pure and beautiful, but you need craft. It takes hard work. So that's one issue.
Just to that point before you get to your second issue, and don't forget your second issue. No, just because I think there's so much truth in that. I think Catholic media today stinks, to be honest with you. You know, and I don't mean to disparage anybody. I'm just being honest. You know, Catholic television is terrible. A lot of Catholic radio is just really bad. Yeah. You know, and I don't want to throw stones in a glass house, but the reality is, I say all the time, why don't you hire really good directors? Why don't you hire really good talent? Why don't you hire good, you know, camera people and editors and audio people? And, you know, why don't you do that? You take a look at The Chosen and how well that's doing. When I first got into documentary work, a friend of mine, he told me, he says, Drew, quality begets quality. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? He says, what you do here, when you invest in quality, the best writers for your scripts, the best editors, the best post-production houses, the best music composers, we did original scored music for a lot of our stuff. He says, that quality will get you other work. And
make other artists want to work with you.
It was true.
Because they see the quality of your production and they say, oh, maybe they can't pay me the same thing as a secular producer will in Hollywood.
Right.
But it's going to be good enough that I will be proud of it. And you don't become an artist unless you're willing to suffer for something you believe in. And so you have to.
Hollywood talent. I worked with different Hollywood talent in some of these things. Mm-hmm. And that program, because it was so well done and won awards, other people said, wow, this is pretty good. We want him to make something like that for us.
Absolutely.
And then meanwhile, if you're the low budget guy using Sue from the parish and, you know, and the delivery's not good and
apologies
the music's
cheesy.
Apologies
to everyone named Sue. We don't mean you. No, it's absolutely true.
It's like you're one and done.
That's why I feel so privileged to be at Relevant Radio with the Mary Beggars. And why I'm so grateful and impressed by Father Rocky's leadership around this, because how many Catholic institutions would make a bet on an entertainment division like Father Rocky and Relevant Radio is on the Mary Beggars? Like the other, you know, there aren't other outlets that are going to do that. And it takes time and it takes money. And as a result of this, for Christmas Live, which you mentioned, we had a writer on there who is an Oscar-nominated director and who's directed films with DreamWorks and just was working on a film with Paul McCartney.
Makes a difference.
And then on this next series, we have a writer who's acted opposite Steve Martin and Tina Fey. And because of Relevant Radio's belief in what the Mary Beggars and what I'm doing with the Mary Beggars, because of that, there is a talent that is starting to get attracted to what we're doing. But it takes time. And
It does.
It takes time.
I'll tell you, hold the thought, because we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll pick it up. A couple things. I want to talk a little bit about what you're producing, let people be aware of that. Also, maybe you can give us a little peek behind the scenes. I mean, how does that writing process work? How many people are in there? I mean, it's. I don't think anybody understands. Like, I've often said this. I mean, the magnitude of and the scope of what goes in to, you know, one screen minute of a documentary, of a film, or of a program that you're producing. How many people, how many layers, how many minutes and hours go into that? No one will ever really know. A lot of work for quality. But we'll talk about it when we come back. If you want to join us, of course, the phones are always open to you. 888-914-9149. Grab a pen and paper, too. I'll get you plugged into some really good programming. That's coming up right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Connect with Drew on the Relevant Radio app.
You know, we receive over a million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters Studio Line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor can support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
A look at life you'll never get anywhere else. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, hey, welcome back. Great to be here with you. Did you grab that pen and paper? If so, I got something I want to get you plugged into. The Merry Beggars is now available. I want you to check out Christmas Live and put this on your calendar there very quickly. Sunday the 4th, 6 Central, okay, 7 Eastern. Get plugged into that. I'm joined this afternoon by the head of that entertainment division here at Relevant Radio, Peter Atkinsons. He's, of course, the director of the Merry Beggars. I hope you've checked out the Night Train. A lot of great stuff that is being produced here. And it might be under your radar. Maybe this is the first time you're hearing about it. You can go back and check out some of this stuff. Last year, the Christmas Carol was fantastic. I was super impressed by the quality of the production, and I think you will be as well. Peter, it's good to have you back in studio with us. Great to spend some time with you here. I always enjoy our conversations.
It's great to be here, Drew.
I feel simpatico with you.
It's my favorite thing about this, the new building that Relevant Radio has, is that I get to be actually opposite you, looking into your eyes as we talk. It's wonderful.
That's awesome. Hey, Peter, let's pick it up on what happens behind the scenes. Let's talk a little bit about what you're doing. But, you know, when we left off, I was talking about really – yeah, I think most people don't understand that the gravity, the scope, the magnitude of all that goes in behind the scenes to make a program come together. What's a writer? Take me through one of your projects. Tell me how it works.
No, absolutely. And just to touch back on the conversation we were having earlier, I think that's part of the reason that a lot of Christian and Catholic and companies and just people of goodwill don't get into creating the culture is because it's not as simple as having a good idea and then making it happen. Like there's a lot that goes into it. So I'll give a quick example of Christmas Live. So Christmas Live, for those of your listeners familiar with Garrison Keillor's Prairie Home Companion, you know, that's sort of a radio variety format. And we thought, okay, what if we do a radio variety show that's Christmas themed for all of Relevant Radio's audience? And so I talked to Father Rocky about this and he loved the idea. And so we started developing this. And, you know, you think of a Christmas radio variety show, what do you have? You have music, you have some performances, you have, you know, radio scripts. And so it's pretty much as simple as getting musicians, writing them, and performing them. Super easy, right? Just 1, 2, 3, and you're done. Except it's not. We had on the day, so to give you a scope of what the actual day looked like, we had around 40 to 50 to people just making the actual thing happen.
Wow.
40 to 50 people fulfilling different roles, fulfilling different tasks. So we had sound engineers, sound designers. We had stagehands moving the mics in between acts. We had a pianist, musicians, 3 music groups, a boys choir, 9 actors. And then about a month and a half before that, we started developing original scripts. And so when you're writing down scripts, when you're trying to develop them, the best way to do that is to have what's called a writer's room. And so I'll call up the writers that I know in my Rolodex and say, you know, hey, we're developing this new series. Here's what it looks like. Here's what the deliverables are. We need so many scripts, so on and so forth. This is the format. And then sort of sell the writers on being a part of it. And then they'll say, yeah, not really for me. Or yes, absolutely. This is great. And with Christmas Live, it was our first live show ever. And so we had to figure out, what is the style of comedy that is going to be right for Relevant Radio's audience? What is going to be the type of storytelling that's right for sort of a family audience, but is still funny? You know, if you're writing comedy it's a Father Aki told me, he's like, well, you know, Peter, comedy is high risk, high reward. And so it's like, you know, if comedy doesn't land, no one's laughing and you're looking at, you know, open jobs. Right. And it's hard to do comedy. It's really hard to write. So we spent a month, I think like a month and a half with the writers. And the way that writers' rooms works, I won't go super into the details, but we'll say, hey, this is the format. We need comedy. This is our audience. Great. Generate pitches. And then at the writer's room, we'll read through like 40, 50 pitches and we'll select seven of those 40 or 50 ones based on how people are reacting in the room. And then the next week they'll come back with drafts and then we'll say, all right, this doesn't work. This is work. And then we'll switch out writers. Sometimes the writer isn't the good fit for a material. We had a few sketches in Christmas Carol that got rewritten like three or four or five times. So it takes time to really cultivate and fine tune the writing. And then you have to rehearse with the actor. Well, first you have to cast, then you have to find the actors, then you have to rehearse with the actors. Meanwhile, we're booking a boys choir and figuring out the technical specifications of how do you mic a boys choir in a room. Oh, and by the way, we didn't have a stage or a theater space. So there was that minor detail of we had to convert the creative space in Relevant Radio, the Commons, into a stage space. So we had to figure out, we had to look around to stage rentals, we had to rent a backdrop, curtains, lights, and then we also booked a professional video team so that we got professional videographers in here so that during the actual performance, you had about 20 mics rolling at one time, the entire show, and about five cameras and one spotlight and a bunch
of
stuff.
And this is for the live show.
This is just for one show.
I'm talking about this, like, just a Christmas Carol and all these others as well. There are people listening right now saying, hey, I would love to use my talent, my skills, to do something like you're doing or be part of it. How does that work? Can they join the team, or is that not possible?
Yeah, no. So the difference between someone who wants to be a writer and someone who is a writer is someone who writes.
Right.
You know, everyone has a great novel that they want to write. I'm sure, Drew, you have the great American novel waiting to be written.
I've got a couple of them.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I've got about three more.
The thing that I've discovered as soon as I became a producer, executive producer, producing things, I found out that everyone has an idea. So it's incredible. I'm sure, you know, everyone has a great guest spot idea for being a radio host.
Right? Everybody thinks they're a programming
officer. And then what happened is, as soon I learned the best response, which is, great, I'd love to see a draft. Yeah. Part with the Mary Bakers is to support families and parents in their vocation of raising kids in a holy, happy, joyful, adventurous home. Like, that is what I want for my family. And so we're producing a series based around the saints. We're going to release this for Lent 2023, and we're going to be telling the stories of St. Joan of Arc, of Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, and the saints who really embraced God's call.
That's awesome.
There's this lie in the world that, you know, if you live a life in holiness, you're going to be praying all the time in a church alone. Yeah. And if you live a life of sin, you're going to be out partying and going crazy. And of course, any of us who have sinned, which I think is all of us, know that it's the exact opposite, that a life of virtue is actually a life of courage and danger and adventure and friendship and love and sacrifice and real, true joy that penetrates to the marrow of your bone. And the life of sin is an initial high and then shame, guilt, fear, sadness, and loneliness.
That's so true. It's a poison.
Absolutely. So that we're going to be trying to tell stories that inspire kids, inspire families, inspire adults to embrace God's call in their lives.
So when can Father Simon or Drew Mariani make a cameo?
Oh, yeah. Do a voiceover. You don't know they haven't already. You don't know.
I can do all sorts of voices.
We'll write one just for you, Drew.
I don't know if I can do anything. I'll do my best. I'll play a radio broadcaster on the
app. We'll make it happen.
Looking forward to it, Peter. Hey, thank you. Always great to talk with you, and keep up your great work. That's Peter Atkinson. Check him out. Go to the Merry Beggars and, of course, Relevant Radio. And don't forget to mark the calendar this Sunday, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on Relevant Radio. You're going to love it, okay? Peter, we'll catch up soon, okay?
Awesome. Thanks so much, Drew.
Well, I'm up against the clock. Only a minute or two left here with you. I want to thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. And I just I really hope you'll spread the word about the Merry Beggars, all the great program they're doing. This is part of what Relevant Radio is all about. You know, that's what your support really is all about. You make it possible for me to be here with you every day, for prayer to be on the air, to learn your faith, but at the same time, to provide wholesome programming. This is how we change the culture. So with that, let me just say God bless you. Until our paths again cross, I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me. Have a great day.